Chapter 6. Swaying slightly, scratching his head, he put the gunstock down on the floor of the small bay, held the weapon by its barrel, and squinted one-eyed into the muzzle, muttering. "Zakalwe," Dizier Sma said, "we diverted 28 million people and a trillion tons of spaceship 2 months off course to get you to Verenhut's on time. I'd appreciate it if you'd wait until the job is done before you blow your brains out." He turned round to see Sma and the drone entering the rear of the small bay. A travel tube capsule flicked away behind them. "Eh?" he said, then waved. "Ah, hi!" He wore a white shirt, sleeves rolled up, black pantaloons, and nothing on his feet. He picked the plasma rifle up, shook it, banged it on the side with his free hand, and sighted down the length of the small bay. He steadied, squeezed the trigger. Light flared briefly, the gun leapt back at him, and there was an echoing snap of noise. He looked down to the far end of the bay, 200 meters away, where a glittering black cube, perhaps 15 meters to a side, sat under the overhead lights. He peered at the distant black object, pointed the gun at it again, and inspected the magnified view on one of the gun's screens. "Weird," he muttered, and scratched his head. There was a small tray floating at his side. It held an ornate metal jug and a crystal goblet. He took a drink from the goblet, staring intently at the gun. "Zakalwe," Smar said, "what exactly are you doing?" "Target practice," he said. He drank from the goblet again. "You want a drink, Smar? I'll order another glass." "No, thanks." Smar looked down to the far end of the bay, at the strange and gleaming black cube. "And what is that?"
"Ice," Scaffin Antiskor said.
"Yeah," he nodded, putting the goblet down to adjust something on the plasma rifle.
"Ice."
"Dyed black ice," the drone said.
"Ice," Smar said, nodding, but none the wiser. "Why ice?"
"Because," he said, sounding annoyed, this ship, with the incredibly silly name, and its 28 trillion people, and its hyper-zillion-billion squintillion tonnage, hasn't got any decent rubbish. That's why."
He flicked a couple of switches on the side of the rifle, aimed again.
"Trillion fucking tons, and it hasn't got any goddamn garbage, apart from its brain, I suppose."
He squeezed the trigger again. His shoulder and arm were pushed back once more, while the light flickered from the weapon's muzzle and sound stuttered. He stared at the view in the sight screen.
"This is ridiculous," he said.
"But why are you shooting at ice?" Sma insisted.
"Sma," he cried, "are you deaf? Because this parsimonious pile of junk claims it hasn't got any rubbish on board it can let me shoot at."
He shook his head, opened an inspection panel on the side of the weapon.
"Why not shoot at target hollows like everybody else?" Sma asked.
"Hollows are all very well, Dizier, but..."
He turned and presented her with the gun.
"Here, hold this a minute, will you? Thanks."
He fiddled with something inside the inspection panel while Sma held the gun in both hands. The plasma rifle was 1.25 meters long and very heavy.
"Hollows are all right for calibration and that sort of crap, but for getting the feel of a weapon, you have to really, really waste something, you know?"
He glanced at her.
"You have to feel the kick and see the debris, real debris. Not this holographic shit. The real stuff."
Sma and the drone exchanged looks.
"You hold this cannon," Sma said to the machine.
Scaffin Amtiskor's fields were glowing pink with amusement.
It took the weight of the gun from her while the man continued to tinker with the weapons inside.
"I don't think a general systems vehicle thinks in terms of junk, Zakalwi," Smar said, sniffing dubiously at the contents of the ornately worked metal jug. She wrinkled her nose.
"Just matter that's currently in use and matter that's available to be recycled and turned into something else to be used. No such thing as rubbish."
"Yeah," he muttered. "That's the crap it came out with as well."
"Gave you ice instead, eh?" the drone said.
"Had to settle for it." He nodded, clicking the armoured inspection panel back into place and lifting the gun out of the drone's grip. "Should take a hit all right, but now I can't get the damn gun to work."
"Zakalwi," the drone sighed. "It would hardly be surprising if it isn't working. That thing belongs in a museum. It's 1100 years old. We make pistols that are more powerful nowadays."
He sighted, carefully, breathed smoothly, then smacked his lips, put the gun down and took a drink from the goblet. He looked back at the drone.
"But this thing's beautiful," he told the machine, taking up the gun and flourishing it. He slapped the weapon's darkly cluttered side. "I mean, take a good look at it. It looks powerful."
He gave an admiring growl, then took up his stance again and shot. This firing fared no better than the others. He sighed and shook his head, staring at the weapon.
"It's not working," he said plaintively.
"It just isn't working. I'm getting recoil, but it just isn't working."
"May I?" Scaffin Amtiskor said.
It floated towards the gun. The man looked suspiciously at the drone. Then he turned the gun over to it. The plasma rifle flashed from every available screen. Things clicked and beeped. The inspection panels flicked open and shut, and then the drone gave the gun back to the man.
"It's in perfect working order," it said.
"Huh?"
He held the weapon in one hand, up and out from his body, then slapped the back of the stock with his other hand, whirling the big rifle round so that it spun like a rotor in front of his face and chest. He didn't take his eyes off the drone while he did this. He was still looking at the machine when he twisted his wrist, brought the gun to a stop, already aimed straight at the distant black cube of ice, and fired it, all in one smooth action. Again, the gun seemed to fire, but the ice sat undisturbed.
"The hell it's working," he said.
"How exactly did your conversation with the ship go, when you asked for your rubbish?" the drone inquired.
"I don't remember," he said loudly. "I told it what a complete cretin it was for not having some junk to shoot at, and it said when people wanted to shoot at real shit, they usually used ice. So I said, 'All right then, you scumbag rocket,' or something like that, 'give me some ice.'"
He held out his hands expressively.
"That was all."
He dropped the gun. The drone caught it.
"Try asking it to clear the bay for firing practice," it suggested. "Specifically, ask it to clear a space in its trapdoor coverage."
He accepted the gun from the drone, looking disdainful.
"All right," he said slowly.
He looked about to say something else, talking into mid-air, then looked uncertain. He scratched his head, glanced at the drone, and appeared to be about to talk to it, then looked away again.
Finally he jabbed a finger at Scaffin Amtiskor.
You ask for all that. It'll sound better coming from another machine."
"Very well, it's done," the drone said.
"You only had to ask."
He said.
He switched his suspicious look from the drone to the distant black cube. He lifted the gun and aimed at the icy mass. He fired. The gun rammed back against his shoulder, and a blinding flash of light threw his shadow behind him. The sound was like a grenade going off. A pencil-thin white line seared the length of the small bay and joined the gun to the 15-meter cube of ice, which shattered into a million fragments in a floor-thumping detonation of light and steam and a furiously blossoming cloud of black vapour. Smar stood, her hands clasped behind her back, and watched debris fountain 50 meters to the top of the bay, where it ricocheted off the roof. More black shrapnel flew the same distance to crash into the bay's side walls, and tumbling, glittering black shards slithered across the floor towards them. Most skidded to a stop on the ridged surface of the bay, though a few small pieces, blown a long way through the air before thumping into the deck, did actually slide past the two humans and the watching drone, and clunk into the rear wall of the bay. Scaffin Amtiscor picked up a fist-sized piece from near Smar's feet. The sound of the explosion echoed clangingly back off the walls a few times, gradually fading. Smar felt her ears relax. "Happy, Zakalwi?" she asked. He blinked, then switched the gun off and turned to Smar. "Seems to be working all right now," he shouted. Smar nodded. He motioned with his head. "Let's go get a drink." He took up the goblet and drank as he walked towards the travel tube port. "A drink?" Smar said, falling into step with the man and nodding at the glass he was drinking from. "Why? What's that?" "Nearly finished. That's what this is," he told her loudly. He poured a last half glass from the metal jug into the goblet. "Ice?" the drone offered, holding up the dripping black lump. "No thanks." Something flickered in the travel tube, and the capsule was suddenly there, door rolling open. "What's this? Trapdoor coverage, anyway?" he asked the machine. "General systems vehicle, internal explosion protection," the drone explained, letting the humans board the capsule first. "Snaps anything significantly more powerful than a fart straight into hyperspace. Blast, radiation, the lot." "Shit," he said, disgusted. "You mean you can let nukes off in these fuckers and they don't even notice?" The drone wobbled. "They notice. Probably nobody else does." The man stood swaying in the capsule, watching the door roll back into place, shaking his head sorrily. "You people just have no idea of fair play, do you?" The last time he had been on a GSV had been 10 years earlier, after he'd almost died on Fols. "Sharadinin? Sharadinin?" He heard the voice, but wasn't sure the woman was really talking to him. It was a beautiful voice. He wanted to reply to it, but he couldn't work out how to. It was very dark. "Sharadinin?" A very patient voice, concerned somehow, but a hopeful voice, a cheerful, even loving voice. He tried to remember his mother. "Sharadinin?" the voice said again, trying to get him to wake up. But he was awake. He tried moving his lips. "Sharadinin, can you hear me?" He moved his lips, exhaled at the same time, and thought he might have produced a noise. He tried to open his eyes. The darkness wavered. "Sharadinin?" There was a hand at his face, gently stroking his cheek. "Shias," he thought for a second, then swept that memory away to where he kept all the others. "Eh," he managed, just the start of a sound. "Sharadinin," the voice said, close to his ear now. "It's Dizier here. Dizier Sma. Remember me?" "Diz," he succeeded in saying after a couple of failures. Sharadinin? Yeah, he heard himself breathe. Try to open your eyes, will you? Trine, he said. Then light came, as though it had had nothing to do with him trying to open his eyes. Things took a while to gel, but eventually he saw a restful green ceiling, illuminated from the sides by a fan-shaped glow of concealed lighting, and Dizier Smar's face looking down at him. "Well done, Sharadinin," she smiled at him. "How are you feeling?" He thought about this. "Weird," he said. He was thinking hard now, trying to remember how he'd got here. Was this some sort of hospital? How had he got here? "Where is this?" he said. Might as well try the direct approach. He tried shifting his hands, but without success. Smar glanced somewhere over his head as he did so. "The GSV congenital optimist. You're all right. You're going to be all right." "If I'm all right, why can't I move my hands or feet? Shit." Suddenly he was tied to the wooden frame again. The girl was in front of him. He opened his eyes and saw her. Smar. A misty, uncertain light glowed all around. He wrenched at his bonds, but there was no sign of give, no hope. He felt the tug on his hair, then the thudding cut of the blade, and saw the girl in the red robe looking at him from somewhere over his bebodied head. Everything revolved. He closed his eyes. The moment passed. He swallowed. He took a breath and opened his eyes again. At least these things seemed to be working. Smar looked down, relieved. "You just remembered?" "Yeah, I just remembered." "You going to be okay?" She sounded serious, but still reassuring. "I'll be all right," he said. Then, "It's just a scratch." She laughed, looked away for a bit, and when she looked to him again, she was biting her lip. "Hey," he said. "Narrow one this time, huh?" He smiled. Smar nodded. "You could say that. Another few seconds and you'd have suffered brain damage. Another few minutes and you'd have been dead. If only you'd had a homing implant, we could have picked you up days..." "Ah, now, Smar," he said gently. "You know, I can't be bothered with all that stuff." "Yeah, I know," she said. "Well, whatever. You're going to have to stay like this for a while." Smar smoothed hair from his forehead. "It'll take about 200 days or so to grow a new body. They want me to ask you. Do you want to sleep through the whole thing, or do you want to stay awake as normal? Or anything in between? It's up to you. Makes no difference to the process." He thought about this. "I suppose I get to do lots of improving things, like listen to music and watch films, or whatever. And read." "If you want," Smar shrugged. "You can go the whole hog and spool fantasy head tapes if you want." "Drink? Drink?" "Yeah. Can I get drunk?" "I don't know," Smar said, looking above and to one side. A voice muttered something. "Who's that?" he asked. "Stod Peris." A young man nodded, coming into view, upside down. "Medic." "Hello there, Mr. Zakalwi. I'll be looking after you, however you decide to spend the time."
"Do you dream when you're under, if you do it that way?" he asked the medic.
"Depends how deep you want to go." We can send you so far down you think no more than a second's passed during those 200 days. Or you can lucid dream every second of them. Whatever you want.
What do most people do?
Switch right off. Wake up with a new body after no appreciable time.
Thought so. Can I get drunk while I'm hooked up to whatever the hell it is I'm hooked up to?
Stod Perice grinned. I'm sure we could arrange it. If you want, we could give you drug glands. Ideal opportunity just...
No, thanks.
He closed his eyes briefly and tried to shake his head.
Occasional inebriety will be quite sufficient.
Stod Perice nodded. Well, I think we can rig you for that.
Great.
Sma? He looked at her. She raised her eyebrows.
I'll stay awake, he told her.
Sma smiled slowly. I had a feeling you might.
You're sticking around?
Could do, the woman said. Would you like me to?
I'd appreciate it.
And I'd like to. She nodded thoughtfully.
Okay. I'll watch you put on weight. Thanks. And thanks for not bringing that goddamn drone. I can imagine the jokes.
Yes, Sma said hesitantly, so that he said,
Sma, what is it?
Well, the woman looked uncomfortable.
Tell me.
Scaffin Antiscor, she said awkwardly, it sent you a present. She fished a small package from her pocket, flourished it, embarrassed.
I don't know what it is, but... Well, I can't open it. Come on, Sma.
Sma opened the package. She looked at the contents. Stod Perice leant over, and then turned quickly away, holding one hand at his mouth, coughing. Sma pursed her lips.
I may ask for a new escort drone.
He closed his eyes.
What is it?
It's a hat. He laughed at that. Sma did too, eventually, though she threw things at the drone later. Stod Perice accepted the hat as an onward gift. It was only later, in the dim red of the hospital section light, while Sma danced slowly with some new conquest, and Stod Perice was dining out with friends and telling them the story of the hat, and life went on throughout the rest of the great ship, that he remembered how, a few years earlier, and very far away, Shias Engin had traced the wounds on his body, cool, slim fingers on the puckered, new-looking flesh, the smell of her skin, and the tingling sweep of her hair. And in 200 days he would have a new body.
And this? I'm sorry. Still fresh, that one.
The wound over his heart would be gone forever, and the heart beneath his chest would not be the same one. And he realized he had lost her. Not Shias Engin, whom he'd loved, or thought he had, and certainly lost. But her, the other one, the real one, the one who'd lived within him through a century of icy sleep. He had thought he would not lose her until the day he died. Now he knew differently, and felt broken by the knowledge and the loss. He whispered her name to the quiet red night. Overhead, the ever-watchful medical monitoring unit saw some fluid seep from the bodiless human's tear ducts, and wondered dumbly at it. How old is old Soldrin now? 80, relative, the drone said. You think he'll want to come out of retirement?
Just because I ask him to?
He looked skeptical. You're all we could think of, Sma told him. Can't you just let the old guy grow old in peace?
There's a little more at stake than the happy retirement of one aging politico, Zakalwi.
What? The universe? Life as we know it?
Yes. Tens, maybe hundreds of millions of times over.
Very philosophical.
And you didn't let the ethnarch Carrion grow old in peace, did you?
Damn right, he said,
and wandered a little further into the armory. That old pisshead deserved to die a million times. The converted mini-bay engineering space housed a dazzling array of culture and other weaponry.
Zakalwi, Smar thought, was like a kid in a toy store.
He was selecting gear and loading it onto a pallet, which Scathin Amtuskor was guiding after the man, down the aisles of racks and drawers and shelves, all stuffed and packed with projectile weapons, line guns, laser rifles, plasma projectors, multitudinous grenades, effectors, plane charges, passive and reactive armor, sensory and guard devices, full combat suits, missile packs, and at least a dozen other distinctly different types of device Smar didn't recognize.
You'll never be able to carry this lot, Zakalwi.
This is just the short list, he told her. He took a stocky, boxy-looking gun with no appreciable barrel from a shelf. He held it out to the drone.
What's this?
Cruise. Assault rifle, Scathin Amtuskor said. 7 14-ton batteries, 7-element single-shot to 44.8 kilorounds a second, minimum firing time 8.75 seconds, maximum single burst, 7 times 250 kilograms, frequency from mid-visible to high X-ray.
He hefted it.
Not very well balanced.
That's its stowed configuration. Slide the whole top back.
He pretended to aim the readied gun.
Now, what's to stop you putting your supporting hand over here, where the beams are going?
Common sense, suggested the drone.
I'll
stick with my obsolete plasma rifle. He put the gun back.
Anyway, Smar, you should be pleased old men do want to come out of retirement for you.
Damn it, I should be devoting myself to gardening or something, not storming off to the galactic backwoods doing your dirty work.
Oh, yeah, Smar said. And a big struggle I had, too, convincing you to quit your gardening and come back to us.
Shit, Zakalwi, your bags were packed.
I must have telepathically already have realized the urgency of the situation.
He heaved a massive black gun from a rack, swung it with both hands, grunting with the effort.
Holy shit! Do you fire this mother, or just use it as a battering ram?
Edirin hand cannon, Scathin Amtuskor sighed. Don't wave it around like that. It's very old and quite rare.
No fucking wonder.
He struggled to lift the gun back into its rack, then continued down the aisle.
Come to think of it, Smar, I'm so old my whole life ought to be on triple time or something.
I'm probably grossly undercharging you for this whole sorry escapade.
Well, if you're going to look at it that way, we should be charging you for patent infringement, giving those old guys their youth back using our technology.
Don't knock it. You don't know what it's like getting that old that early.
Yeah, but it applies to everybody. You were giving it only to the most evil, power-mad bastards on the planet.
They were top-down societies. What do you expect? Anyway, if I'd given it to everybody, think of the population explosion.
Zakalwi, I thought about that when I was about 15. They teach you that sort of stuff in early school in the culture. It was all thought through long ago. It's part of our history, part of our upbringing. That's why what you did would look insane to a school kid.
You are like a school kid to us. You don't even want to get old. Nothing more immature than that.
Ooh, he said, stopping suddenly and taking something from an open shelf.
What's this?
Beyond your ken, Scathin Amtuskor said.
What a beauty!
He gripped the stunningly complicated weapon and twirled it.
What is this? He breathed.
Micro-armament system. Rifle, the drone narrated. It's... Oh, look, Zakalwi, it has 10 separate weapon systems, not including the semi-sentient guard facility, the reactive shield components, the IFF set quick reaction swing packs, or the AG unit, and before you ask, the controls are all on the wrong side because that's the left-hand bias version, and the balance, like the weight and the independently variable inertia, are fully adjustable. It also takes about half a year's training just to learn how to use it safely, let alone competently, so you can't have one.
I don't want one, he said, stroking the weapon. But what a device.
He put it back with the rest. He glanced at Smar.
Dizzy, I know the way you people think. I respect it, I guess. But your life isn't my life. I live in unsafe ways in dangerous places. Always have done. Always will do. I'll die soon enough anyway. So why should I suffer the additional burden of getting old even slowly?
Don't try and hide behind necessity, Zakalwi. You could have changed your life. You don't have to live the way you do. You could have joined the culture, become one of us, at least lived the way we do. But, Sma, he exclaimed, turning to her, that's for you. It isn't for me. You think I'm wrong to have my age stabilized. Even the chance of immortality is wrong to you.
Okay, I can see that.
In your society, the way you live your lives, of course it is. You have your 350, 400 years, and know you'll get right to the end of them, die with your boots off. For me, that won't work. I don't have that certainty. I enjoy the perspective from the edge. I like to feel that updraft on my face. So sooner or later, I'll die. Violently, probably, Smart. Maybe even foolishly, because that's often the way of it. You avoid nukes and determined assassins, and then choke on a fishbone. But who cares? So, your stasis is your society, and mine is my age. But we are both assured of death.
Smar looked at the floor, hands clasped behind her back.
All right, she said. But don't forget who gave you that perspective from the edge.
He smiled sadly. Yes, you saved me. But you also lied to me. Sent me on damn fool missions where I was on the opposite side from the one I thought I was on. Had me fight for incompetent aristos I'd gladly have strangled. In wars where I didn't know you were backing both sides. Filled my balls full of alien seed I was supposed to inject into some poor damn female. Nearly got me killed. Very nearly got me killed a dozen times or more.
You've never forgiven me for that, have you? Scaffin Amtiscor said, with fake bitterness.
Oh, Sharadinine, Smar said. Don't pretend it hasn't been fun, too.
Smar, believe me. It has not all been fun.
He leant against a cabinet full of ancient projectile weapons.
And worse than all that, he insisted, is when you turn the goddamn maps upside down.
What?
Smar said, puzzled. Turning the maps upside down, he repeated. Have you any idea how annoying and inconvenient it is when you get to a place and find that they map the place the other way up compared to the maps you've got? Because of something stupid like some people think a magnetic needle is pointing up to heaven when other people think it's just heavier and pointing down? Or because it's done according to the galactic plane or something? I mean, this might sound trivial, but it's very upsetting.
Zakalwi, I had no idea.
Let me offer you my apologies and those of the entire Special Circumstances section. No, all of contact. No, the entire culture. No, all intelligent species.
Sma, you remorseless bitch. I'm trying to be serious.
No, I don't think you are, Matt, but it's true. They turn them the wrong way up.
Then there must, Dizier Sma said, be a reason for it.
What?
He demanded. Psychology, Sma and the drone said at the same time.
Two suits? Sma said later, when he was making his final equipment selection. They were still in the armory mini-bay, but Scaffin Amtus Corps had gone off to do something more interesting than watch a kid shop for toys. He heard the accusatory tone in Smar's voice and looked up.
Yes, two suits. So what?
Those can be used to imprison somebody, Zakalwi. I know that. They're not just for protection.
Smart, if I'm lifting this guy out of a hostile environment, with no immediate help from you guys, because you have to stand off and be seen to be pure, fake though that might be, I have to have the tools to do the job. Serious FYT suits are numbered among those tools.
One, Smart said.
Smart, don't you trust me?
One, Smart repeated.
God damn it!
All right. He dragged the suit away from the pile of equipment.
Sharadinin, Smar said, suddenly conciliatory. Remember, we need Beishai's commitment, not just his presence. That's why we couldn't impersonate him. That's why we couldn't tamper with his mind.
Smar, you're sending me to tamper with his mind. All right, Smar said, suddenly nervous-looking. She clapped her hands once, softly, looked a little embarrassed.
By the way, Sharadinin, what exactly are your plans?
I know better than to ask for a mission profile or anything formal, but
how do you mean to get to Beishai?
He sighed.
I'm going to make him want to come to me.
How? Just one word.
A word?
A name.
What, yours?
No. Mine was supposed to be kept a secret when I was advisor to Beishai, but it must have leaked out by now. Too dangerous. I'll use another name.
Aha.
Smar looked expectantly at him, but he went back to choosing between the various bits of equipment he'd picked out.
Beishai is in this university, right? He said, not turning to look at Smar.
Yes, in the archives, almost permanently. But there are a lot of archives, and he moves around a lot, and there are always guards.
Okay, he told her. If you want to do something useful, try finding something that the university might want.
Smar shrugged.
It's a capitalist society. How about money?
I'll be doing that myself. He paused, looked suspicious.
I will be allowed plenty of discretion in that area, won't I?
Unlimited expenses, Smar nodded. He smiled.
Wonderful.
He paused.
What source?
A ton of platinum? A sack of diamonds? My own bank?
Well, more or less your own bank, yes, Smar said. We've been building up something called the Vanguard Foundation since the last war. Commercial empire, comparatively ethical, expanding quietly. That's where your unlimited expenses will come from.
Well, with my unlimited expenses, I'll probably try offering this university lots of money. That it would be better if there was some actual thing we could tempt them with.
All right, she said, nodding.
Then her brow wrinkled. She indicated the combat suit.
What did you call that thing?
He looked puzzled, then said, Oh, it's an FYT suit.
Yes, a serious FYT suit. That's what you said. But I thought I knew all the nomenclature. I've never heard that acronym before. What does it stand for?
It stands for a serious fuck you too suit. He grinned.
Smar made a clicking noise with her tongue. Should have known better than to ask, shouldn't I?
2 days later, they stood in the hangar of the Xenophobe. The very fast picket had left the GSV a day earlier, slung at the Virenhut's cluster. It had accelerated hard, and now it was braking hard. He was packing the gear he would need into a capsule that would take him down to the surface of the planet where Soldrin Beishai was. The initial stage of his in-system journey would be on a fast three-person module. It would loiter in the atmosphere of a nearby gas giant planet. The Xenophobe itself would wait in interstellar space, ready to provide support if needed.
Are you positive you don't want Scaffin Antiskor to come with you?
Absolutely positive. Keep that airborne arsehole to yourself.
Some other drone?
No.
A knife missile? Dizier, no. I don't want Scaffin Antiskor or anything else that thinks it can think for itself.
Hey?
Just refer to me as though I'm not here, Scaffin Antiskor said.
Wishful thinking, drone.
Better than none at all. So above par for you, the machine said.
He looked at the drone.
You sure they didn't issue a factory recall in your batch number?
Myself, said the drone sniffily, I have never been able to see what virtue there could be in something that was 80% water.
Anyway, Smar said, you know all the relevant stuff, yes?
Yes, he said tiredly.
The man's tanned, smoothly muscled body rippled as he bent, securing the plasma rifle in the capsule. He wore a pair of briefs. Smar, hair still tousled from bed, for this was early morning by ship time, wore a jellaba.
You know the people to contact, she fretted.
And who's in charge and on what side?
And what to do if my credit facilities are suddenly withdrawn?
Yes.
Everything.
If, when you get him out, you head for the enchanting sunny system of Impren, he said tiredly, in a sing-song voice, where there are lots of friendly natives and a variety of ecologically sound space habitats, which are neutral.
Zakoli, Smar said suddenly, taking his face in both hands and kissing him.
I hope this all works out.
Me too. Funnily enough, he said.
He kissed Smar back.
She pulled away, eventually.
He shook his head, running his gaze down and up the woman's body, grinning.
One day, Dizier.
She shook her head and smiled insincerely. Not unless I'm unconscious or dead, Sharadinin.
Oh, I can still hope, then.
Smar slapped his backside.
On your way, Zakalwi.
He stepped into the armored combat suit. It closed around him. He flipped the helmet back.
He looked suddenly serious. You just make sure you know where...
We know where she is, Smar said quickly. He looked at the floor of the hangar for a moment and smiled back into Smar's eyes.
Good. He clapped his gloves together.
Great. I'll be off. See you later, with any luck.
He stepped into the capsule.
Take care, Sharadinin, Smar said.
Yes. Look after your disgusting cloven butt, Scaffin Antiskor said.
Depend on it, he said, and blew both of them a kiss.
From General Systems vehicle to very fast picket, to small module, to the lobbed capsule, to the suit that stood in the cold desert dust with a man encased inside it. He looked out through the open faceplate and wiped a little sweat from his brow. It was dusk over the plateau.
A few metres away, by the light of two moons and a fading sun, he could see the rim rock, frost-whitened. Beyond was the great gash in the desert which provided the setting for the ancient, half-empty city where Soldran Beishai now lived. Clouds drifted, and the dust collected. "Well," he sighed, to no one in particular, and looked up into yet another alien sky. "Here we are again."